Okay, so, all right, so you listened to part one. This is part two. It's really, as you see, it's actually quite simple. It's not at all complicated, except it's disguised by the spectacle, these kind of ridiculous stories that are told, and the diseducation of the public. Like, it's important that this sort of civics and math and stuff is not taught to the public anymore, especially to this, like, little group of clerks, a little social, I call them clerks from the Benda, as a homage to the Julian Benda title, but the culture workers have been made extremely ignorant. The leading culture worker classes, so, and they have an outsized influence on, you know, public perceptions. With social media has amplified this influence enormously. A reasonably intelligent person could figure out these scams, and, you know, on the back of an envelope with a pencil, or even in your head, you know, people who have an education that's not mostly indoctrination. But now, of course, at the disposal of these, of the ruling class, is this massive computing power where they don't even have to guess about things anymore. They know exactly how much surplus they can squeeze out of, you know, Indian peasants before they go below calorie levels to reproduce. You know, they know exactly how little people can eat before they suffer amenorrhea and won't have children anymore. They have, you know, immense amounts of data that's all collected at public expense now, and the power to run lots of scenarios. So, of course, these scams get more and more elaborate. Like, so given the situation of, let's go back to what was talking about in part one. So you have the entrepreneurial business, which is not actually some individual trying to rise. Usually it's not someone trying to rise, but some mere shell arrangement that's owned by the ruling class, you know, some corporation that already is, all its profits are already guaranteed, if it ever has any, is guaranteed back to the same class that owns the risk-free loans that are guaranteed by the working class. So how do you make them even more, you know, how does you even, you have to accelerate these accumulations, because of course the ruling class is not settling for, you know, it's 5% a year or 7% a year, or, you know, it wants to make the entire, all of humanity destitute so that it controls everything. That's what a ruling class is. That's why you have feudal lords warring, trying to get the next territory and trying to you know, take the rights away from the serfs, make them more, you know, there's no such thing as enough. Once you have the world market, there's no such thing as enough for capital. It's a game for the possession of everything, including all of humanity as slaves. So anyway, to bring that down to a smaller picture and a story, you know, so I'm telling you a story and releasing your endorphins and your dopamine. So the entrepreneurial level, right, that is paying the 7%, that's actually, you know, running the galley, whipping the slaves, getting everybody's life, you know, taking the 10 hours of life, and more from the working class and giving it to the ruling class. They've got a loan to do this that's actually come from the workers themselves, right? If you follow the circle back to the Fed, you see that the loan, that the money, the capital they're working for is coming from the workers themselves. And this is something Marx explained is the large architecture of capital itself. But here it's even functioning exactly the same way on a smaller level. It's sort of wheels within wheels. That is, the working class, the ruling class expropriates the products of labor that becomes capital, which it controls labor with. So in, you know, the Robinsonade, you know, Marx warned against the Robinsonade, the individual way of telling a story. Like when you look for value, you imagine Robinson Crusoe on his island, and that this is, you're never going to get to a truce imagining people isolated on an island, you know, with one other person or with objects, because that's not the reality. You always have to begin with the big picture. But after we have now seen the big picture, we want to go down and look at a little detail of this picture just to illustrate what this means. So, you know, as Marx would say, how capital is the worker's own life alienated from him, taken away, and then made into a weapon to control him. It's like you have a slave, you make him spend his whole life making something for you that you can then sell, and then with the profits from that, you buy up the earth around him, so he's enclosed. You know, you buy the stream that he needs his water from, you know, with his life, you know, the value that you've beaten out of his body then encloses the things that he needs to reproduce himself. And there's a great movie, Sahara, actually, with Humphrey Bogart, that was written by communist John Howard Lawson, that illustrates this really well at the end. Anyway, but it literally, the expropriated capital literally becomes a weapon. And here, this is accelerated because it's not just that the capital that the capitalists have, you know, historically accumulated in this process of exploiting labor. Now they're actually using the state to take the workers' wages, you know, to do a retroactive and a retroactive exploitation on top of the stealing the commodities that are physically produced by the laborer. They're going to steal from the future and the past of the workers. The stock market allows you to mine. This is the fictitious capital. You should read Marx on this, but allows you to mine capital from further and further in the future. And the retroactive exploitation, the enclosures, the stealing the pensions, and this mechanism of making the treasuries guarantee the business, to the refusal to allow the ruling class to lose. It gets everything it's expended in wages plus all its losses back from the workers. And that's why when you look around, you see that the working class is getting poorer and poorer, because you say, how could this be, right? They're working, you go to work, you make things, people are buying them, the houses they built are worth more and more money, et cetera, et cetera. But they're getting poorer and poorer. How is that? How are they not, you know, getting a little more prosperous? Why is the rising tide not lifting their boats even, you know, at a slower rate? It's the opposite. It's because they're being exploited, not just in the usual fashion, in the, you know, sort of classic fashion of having their labor power bought and the products that they produce expropriated, but they're being robbed, plundered from the future and the past. Okay, So now with the, and this, I'm going to give you an example of this, how this plays out is in the scenario that I was discussing before, where you have an entrepreneur who's gone and he's gotten a government, a USDA guaranteed loan from the commercial bank. So now he has some capital and now he's exploiting some workers. And the ruling class has gotten the state to now pass a law that his profits are going to be tax-free, which is if he goes to these zones. Now, so they've looked at the map, they've crunched all their data, they've looked at the map, they see these opportunities, where do the working class still live, where do they still own things, and they've marked those as zones of, there's some trickle-down story told, but I don't even know what it is. It's so nonsensical. But, so if you go to downtown Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and you buy a historic building there, you'll get 20% of your development cost back in tax breaks, tax relief, tax credits. I mean, credits, like actually dollar to dollar. And you can sell those to the ruling class for less, So you have no capital gains tax. In all these zones that they figured are the open zone, parts of the United States, all over the United States, there are these zones now where if capital is technically invested, but it's not, if the entrepreneurial level, which is a fictitious entity owned by the ruling class, goes and takes the money from the treasury, this that is lent around in this, circle, that's a complete fiction, it's a show, then they wind up with this money, and then they buy property, say, or open businesses, or exploit people in certain zones on the map, and eventually it could be everywhere, but they've started out doing it in these zones. They don't have to pay capital gains. And any amount of this money that they invest, which is already the working class's money, once again, this is the money from the working class that they didn't get on the last round of exploiting them. This is the part that the working class had to give to the state for the communal costs, and they get that back, and they technically invest. In other words, they claim it, and they trade it for assets, other kinds of forms of assets. They get returns from the working class in two more forms. They get the tax credits, which they can sell to the oil industry or banks or, people who, Bezos, the whoever's showing a profit, so they don't have to pay tax on their profits. And so they can capitalize that, they can monetize it immediately. So they're mining, again, from the future of the working class, and they get this tax-free, capital gains-free profit if it's generated in some way or other physically in these zones, which has all, there's all kinds of finagling you can do with that, but, however, and the rationale for that is, I don't even know, to encourage people to, who knows, it's kind of transparently fake, but that's the degree now. So these programs are keeping the gentrifications going despite the kind of, despite the measures that the ruling class had to take to dispossess the rung of working class that owned houses, which was to pull back on those immediate windfall, rapid kind of balloon appreciations of the, bubble appreciations.